Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, Jay Fox will speak with an expert about savings available to seniors with Medicare prescription drug caps. And we'll learn more about the usage, downsizing, and repurposing of office space in Columbus. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up on Columbus Perspective.
More than one in five Ohioans are on Medicare. Changes to the prescription drug plan this year will impact hundreds of thousands right here in Columbus. Lee Purvis is the prescription drug policy principal at AARP's Public Policy Group and joins us now on Columbus Perspective. That's a lot of P's, isn't it?
It absolutely is. My name doesn't help.
How did this all come about? There's a new out-of-pocket prescription drug cap, and it could potentially benefit the older residents of Columbus and beyond.
Absolutely. So as of January 1st of this year, people who are enrolled in Medicare prescription drug plans are going to have their out-of-pocket prescription drug costs capped at $2,000 per year. And that's part of a law that passed in 2022 that AARP strongly supported that includes a lot of different changes that will help reduce prescription drug prices and out-of-pocket costs for people enrolled in Medicare. And this new out-of-pocket cap is just incredibly important and, frankly, historic because previously people in Medicare prescription drug plans faced unlimited out-of-pocket costs, and some were spending upwards of $10,000 per year.
That's an incredible amount of money for senior citizens who are on extremely fixed incomes, especially those that are just living off Social Security.
Absolutely. We always like to point out that the median income for people in Medicare is around $36,000 per year. So when you think back to the idea of someone spending $10,000 just on their prescription drugs, that is completely unaffordable, really for anyone, but especially for someone on a fixed income.
So how did this all come about? Was it a lobbying effort? Was there a senator or a congressperson that stood behind this?
This is actually a years-long effort from a lot of different actors who are very strongly interested in ensuring that people can afford the prescription drugs they need. And AARP played a very strong role in that. We advocated for years to try to get some of the changes that were included in this law that passed in 2022, and the out-of-pocket cap was one of them.
So I'm looking at a graphic that shows the state of Ohio and the share of Part D enrollees estimated to benefit from the new $2,000 out-of-pocket cap. And it says that 95% of Part D enrollees with a reduction in total out-of-pocket costs in 2025, and those people are going to save $2,494. Where does that put Ohio in the mix nationally?
It actually is very comparable to the national numbers. Our most recent report took a look at the number of people who are going to hit that new out-of-pocket cap and see savings even after you take 2025 premiums into account. And what we found is nationally, those who reach the cap and see savings will average about $2,500 in savings. And the share that will reach that cap and see savings is about 95%. So Ohio is right in line with the rest of the country.
Now, you guys are also advocating for drug price renegotiations. And I know just recently Ozempic was among one of 15 that Medicare is looking at negotiating. Where do things stand with that?
Yeah, you have a very timely news bit there. We just received the list of 15 drugs that are going to be negotiated next for prices that will become available in 2027. And Ozempic is on that list. This is also incredibly historic. This is another solution that AARP has been focused on for a very long time. Allowing Medicare to negotiate these prices has already led to significant savings for the products that have already been negotiated. So we're very much looking forward to seeing what prices result from this latest round.
So the American Association of Retired Persons, or People, if you will, has come up with a report that reveals the impact that all of these changes are going to have on senior citizens. What does the future look like for people over the age of 55?
Honestly, the fact that this law has created so many new protections for people who are in the Medicare program is important for everyone. It is important, of course, for people who are on Medicare now, but those protections will be there when people age into the Medicare program themselves. And they actually are already benefiting even if they aren't a Medicare beneficiary, because Medicare is funded with taxpayer funds. So the fact that we're going to see billions of dollars of savings from this 2022 law is actually going to help taxpayers as well. So this really is a law that has wide-ranging impacts and is going to result in some level of savings for a lot of people.
Do you think that it'll also help sustain the Medicare program longer than some of the prognostications that frighten most of the public recently?
That is a really good question, and it's actually very interesting. The Medicare Part D program obviously covers prescription drugs. What a lot of people don't think about is that if people can't afford to take their prescription drugs, sometimes they get sicker than they would have otherwise. You know, what might be a high cholesterol problem today could be a heart attack tomorrow. And so the fact that this law is lowering out-of-pocket costs for people has already been estimated to reduce costs in other parts of the Medicare program, because it won't have as high of healthcare spending because people will be healthier. So it's an interesting question, and definitely something that demonstrates the importance of ensuring that prescription drugs are affordable.
Well, I'm in that age demographic. We call it of a certain age. And I know a lot of my friends are concerned about it, too. So where can I tell them to go to learn more about all of this?
People who want to learn more about this new out-of-pocket cap and AARP's ongoing work to help lower prescription drug prices can go to aarp.org.
All right. Lee Purvis, thank you so much for joining us. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's Jay Fox.
Columbus, Ohio has plenty of office space. Unfortunately, only 75% of it is used, and that has been the case for at least the last 18 months. Mark Salvatelli is the CEO of NAOP, the Commercial Real Estate Trade Association, and joins us now on Columbus Perspective. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Jay. Great to be here.
Is the office vacancy rate in Columbus the norm, or are we just having our own problems?
It's roughly about the norm. We've seen high vacancy rates across the country right now, but that's starting to change. And, you know, we are seeing more companies bringing more people back to the office, and how they're using that space is changing as well. What it also comes down to, too, Jay, is that, you know, it's all about the space itself and what's in that space. And, you know, Columbus has a lot of very good office space that's there that can be amenitized if it's not already amenitized. And that's really helpful to bringing people back.
How much of this is related to the COVID pandemic?
A lot of it, not all of it. You know, some of it certainly is related to the high interest rate environment that we've been working in for the past few years. I mean, it certainly made a number of companies reluctant to pursue some capital expenditures. But look, no question about it, the pandemic had an impact on it. But we're starting to see that change. You know, there are a number of companies that are bringing people back. You know, we see on the national scale, Amazon, Morgan Stanley bringing their folks back 5 days a week. But what we really see is, you know, there's this good kind of balance here of about 3 days a week with a lot of companies. It's given employees a little bit more work-life balance to be able to work at home a little bit. I mean, we were teleworking before the pandemic. Now we're just kind of shifting it, but still bringing folks into the office, because I think most people would agree, you can be so much more collaborative and entrepreneurial when you're with a group of people in person than you can over a Zoom or team meeting. You know, it just, you just can't spitball ideas as well and see what sticks when you're sitting in your bunker in your own house.
Well, and that's absolutely true. I mean, as much as I love my cat, he can only provide so much intel. The business of working from home became comfortable for people. They could make their own coffee. They could use their own restroom. They had their own snacks, et cetera, you know, and not necessarily have to dress for work. What will draw people back to working in an office environment in 2025?
Yeah, you know, Jay, that's a great question. And there are a number of things that are bringing people back. And you know, the market's helping us understand this. But what we've seen is that, you know, buildings with certain amenities, you know, whether it's game rooms, fitness centers, daycare, you know, either within the building or very close by, access to transit, you know, all these things are very important. You know, here actually in NAOP's office, we've had this prior to the pandemic, you know, we have a quiet room for everybody. You know, if they need 15 minutes to just kind of check out, recharge, maybe take the best power nap that's ever existed, you know, it's there. And it's kind of like, you know, maybe you're doing that at home too. You just need a few minutes to decompress or to maybe take a private phone call, and it's there. And a lot of landlords are seeing that when they provide these type of amenities within their buildings, these are the buildings that companies want to lease from, because they have those amenities, because that's what their employees are telling them they want to see in their build, you know, where they're working.
I remember 40 years ago, huge, sprawling office campuses, and they came up in the 80s, the 90s, and the early 2000s. And now there seems to be a reversal of trend. The question is, do we need all of this space, or will there be a downsizing of space used per business?
Yeah, you know, I think we're getting towards an equilibrium, Jay. You know, there was a lot of development pre-pandemic. So we had a lot of office space that came on the market, not only, you know, 2018, 2019, but even, you know, the years after the pandemic. But we haven't seen a lot of new development recently, and that's helping balance out the market a little bit. Now, unquestionably, there are some buildings that are older stock. I mean, buildings age just like people. And, you know, after a little bit of time, you know, it's time to go out to the pasture. But there are other ways that these buildings are being used. One of the things that we're seeing around the country, Columbus is no exception, is taking these buildings and addressing what is also a big problem in a lot of areas, housing. You know, a number of these buildings are, they can be adapted to apartments. And that has been a great way for both the development community and cities and states to help address the same problem. You know, and in other circumstances, look, these buildings may very well be torn down, but when buildings are torn down, typically they're replaced right on the spot, just with a much newer, modern building with the amenities that a lot of companies and people are looking for.
A lot of these old buildings have foundations and exterior structures that cannot be duplicated today. But the problem is, the interior structure, like the plumbing and the electrical systems, are often outdated. Is it more expensive to repair plumbing and electric, or is it more expensive to tear down and rebuild?
It depends on the building. You know, part of it could be the footprint of the building, because that really will help determine whether or not that the building could be put to another use, specifically for housing. But you are right. I mean, a typical office building does not have all the plumbing connections that an apartment building is going to have. You know, in a lot of communities, And developers are working together to try to find that solution, because you are right. You know, it's not inexpensive to do it. And this, you know, higher interest rate environment has made it difficult. But in a number of circumstances, you know, communities have found a way to work with the development community to make that happen and overcome the cost, where it's a win for the community to have more housing. And it's not cost prohibitive for the developers to make that renovation to the building.
Well, and I think about an example in downtown Dayton where a particular building had been empty for years. Now there's grant money being thrown at that building to turn it into 260 plus apartments. And I think that's a trend that we're probably going to see in a lot of urban metros. Been a lot of news coverage done about New York City as a working example. So do you think that's a continuing trend?
I do. As a matter of fact, NAIOP has been working closely with Representative Mike Carey right out of there, Central Ohio. And Representative Carey introduced in the last Congress the Revitalizing Downtowns and Main Streets Act, which is to provide tax credits, tax incentives, and working with local and state governments to rehab the buildings, just like you're talking about in Dayton, because we are seeing that throughout the country. Like you said, we've seen it in New York. We're seeing it in Columbus. We're seeing it in Dayton. And it's really happening in a number of areas around the country.
Mark Salvatelli is the CEO of NAIOP. We thank you for being with us today and shedding some light on these new developments. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan. This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State, A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV.
Thanks for joining us for Face the State. I'm Doug Petcash. When Trump is sworn in, he will become only the second president in U.S. history to serve two non-consecutive terms, the other being Grover Cleveland in the late 1800s. He is also the oldest president-elect in our nation's history. Along with that, another first, Vice President-elect J.D. Vance. He will become the first vice president from Ohio and the nation's 50th vice president. And in Vance's hometown, city leaders are ready to let everyone know where he got his start. The city of Middletown shared this photo of their new road signs. They will be installed at the entrances to the city to honor the nation's 50th vice president. The 40-year-old Vance was born in Middletown in 1984 and is a 2003 graduate of Middletown High School. Joining me now is an Ohioan who will be at the inauguration in Washington, D.C., Ohio GOP vice chair and Franklin County GOP chair, Meredith Friedhoff. Meredith, thanks for coming in today. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
So, what will you be doing at the inauguration?
I will be celebrating with everyone in Ohio. We have over 300 Ohioans coming, and we've planned lunches, breakfasts, gatherings, and an Ohio ball. So we are very excited to celebrate.
Now, is this your first one?
It's my first one.
So what are your expectations going into it about, you know, maybe the hustle and bustle of the day or what's going to be happening?
I was at the convention, so I've been referring to it as Convention 2.0.
Okay.
A lot of scheduling, buses to take you different places, and meeting a lot of people from other states as well.
So how big of an opportunity is this for you, for other members of the Ohio GOP, to network, to you know, maybe take care of some Ohio business while you're there?
It's a great opportunity to represent Ohio there. We have been on the front and center stage for so many things in this past year. Ohio's own J.D. Vance, we're over the moon about that. Senator-elect Bernie Moreno was just sworn in. Over 300 people went to D.C. to celebrate that with him, and I went as well. He's going to be a fantastic senator. And then with the national game coming up, I mean, the Buckeyes, we have a great chance to really make a statement there and be a light at this inauguration.
Are you going to be able to skip out of the balls or anything to be able to check out the national championship game?
If J.D. figures out a way, I'm following him.
Well, he did tweet that, you know, would anybody mind if I went to the national championship? I take it that was tongue-in-cheek.
I thought that was hilarious, but that's how we all feel. We're Buckeyes. We're so excited. So two very important things are happening at the same time, but I'm certain we will be at the inauguration activities.
So I know that many members of, you know, the in-state politics, politicians, as well as the GOP leadership is going to be there. You talked about, you know, the people you can talk to and whatnot, but is there anything specific that the Ohio delegation that's going to this will be focusing on as you rub elbows and shake hands?
I think we focus on the message that the president has given us about rebirth, reunification, hope, all the plans, all the mandates the American people gave us. We are supporting of that. JD's supporting of that. Senator Moreno's supportive of that. So we will continue to hold that up and a part of our big part of our conversations for sure.
So in the big picture of things, what are your expectations for this second Trump administration?
I expect him to do the things he said he was going to do in their Herculean lifts. But I think the committees he's appointing is going to be very helpful. I think the primary thing that we have to do is secure our border. Two-thirds of Americans want a more secure border, and I think that has to start on day one. And I think once we figure that out, then we can work on legal immigration and a way that people can come here legally and we can support them.
Of course, the economy was also a huge issue this time. The president-elect during the campaign had said, you know, he was going to bring down inflation and bring down prices. He backed off that, you know, somewhat after the election, saying, you know, it's not easy to bring prices down right away. Do you think that was the right thing for him to kind of lower the bar for the expectations on that? And do you still see that as a big issue that he'll be attacking?
I think it's a huge issue. You've heard people say we don't have a money problem, we have a spending problem. And I think that's true. And I think people like Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy and Doge can take a look at that and save some dollars that will trickle down to the American people that are struggling.
And so when you look at J.D. Vance, 40 years old, vice president elect, only served in the Senate for 2 years before now rising to be vice president. Many times vice presidents kind of, you know, fade into the background, obviously, because there's the president that's leading the way. What are your expectations for him? Do you expect him to be in the shadows?
I do not expect that at all. VP-elect J.D. Vance is dynamic, brilliantly smart, and energetic. He's a young man with great ideas and a great future. I expect him to be a leader throughout.
Have you had a chance to talk to him? Do you know, you know, a lot of times vice presidents will have a platform, an issue that they focus on. Have you heard anything along those lines?
Immigration and the border is a key to securing safety. Everything that's happening with the drugs coming into our country, missing children and trafficking, we have to, there's a human element to this that we have to address and fix, and safe communities. Mm-hmm. We're in an urban county. Urban counties struggle with safety, and the residents have told us they need help.
No matter what, Ohio is going to have two brand new senators with no longtime experience in the Senate. Do you find that to be perhaps a disadvantage in getting the ball rolling for things that are important for Ohio?
Not at all.
Why not?
When I met with Senator Bernie Moreno in D.C. at his swearing-in, he's already put in a team that's working from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. and overnight as well. He believes in customer service because of his background. He wants to have the best team to serve the people of Ohio for all of their needs. I think that he's going to run this like a business, and he's going to be very effective. I also think our Republican bench is so deep and so smart and hardworking that whomever the governor chooses for to be our next senator is going to already have the tools to be very successful.
Now, obviously, Republicans did very well in the past election nationally and here in Ohio. With that behind us, what is the focus for the Ohio GOP now? You know, you were obviously focused on getting candidates elected, but now that's over. So what are you focusing on now?
I want to continue that momentum and bring that to our each county so that we can unite and make better plans for our state moving forward. We're focusing on local elections. We're focusing on city council elections and raising up good candidates that can fill some positions in Ohio that are going to be open, and also spreading the word that we are here for people. We have plans to make things better in the state at a local level, and a lot of county chairs are involved in that.
Meredith Friedhoff, Vice Chair of the Ohio GOP, thanks for your time today and your perspective on the Inauguration Day tomorrow.
Thank you. It's nice to see you.
Stay warm.
Thank you.
It's going to be cold. Well, just this past week, I did have a chance to talk one-on-one with Ohio's new senator, Republican Bernie Moreno. We covered many topics, including his plans for Inauguration Day. He says he will celebrate the Trump victory, which he calls a victory for America, but then get back to business.
Hopefully what we do is immediately after the inauguration's over, that we get right back into the building and confirm every single one of President Trump's cabinet nominees, especially those that involve national security, so that President Trump has a full and complete team in place. That's the goal here in the Republican conference, and that's what we're poised to get done.
I also asked Moreno about his focus as his six-year term kicks off. He says the first priority is putting his state team together.
We have a state team unlike anything else. We're going to make the announcement over the next 2 weeks. We're going to have offices in every corner of the state. Sherrod Brown had offices in Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati. We'll have offices throughout the entire state, and we're going to do it at the exact same cost to the taxpayer that Sherrod Brown only had three or four offices. So we've put that apparatus in place. We're then going to have an executive council in place that's business leaders throughout the state that are getting exactly $0 to do this, led by Mark Kwame, who's uniquely qualified to do this. Come Monday, when President Trump's inaugurated, we can get to work and really get the things done that I campaigned on. I wasn't here. I didn't come to play, as they say. I came to actually do things, and we're going to get to work right away.
And as the president-elect gets ready to take office, there are still some appointments he needs to make, including U.S. ambassador to Haiti. Some reports are claiming Trump is considering Ohio Governor Mike DeWine for the position. The governor and first lady have had a close connection to Haiti for decades. A school named after their daughter, Becky, who died in a car accident in 1993, has helped thousands of poor Haitian children over the last 25 years. When 10TV asked the governor if he would be interested in the ambassador role, this was his response.
Governor, if you are asked, will you accept the U.S. ambassador's job to Haiti?
Fran, I've been very focused on Haiti throughout the last probably 25 years, but this is not something that we're looking to at all. Fran, I want to stay close to our grandchildren, my children, so I'm not looking for any ambassadorship anywhere.
Coming up next on Face the State, it will be called Arsenal One, adding to the drone arsenal of the U.S. military. The massive development project will bring millions of dollars and thousands of jobs to Central Ohio. We're breaking down its potential impact.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
The company's name is Anduril. It makes drones for the military, and it will do that right here in Central Ohio. State leaders and the company made that announcement late this week, calling it an historic economic development project. Anduril will build its Arsenal One site in Pickaway County. It's expected to be a 5 million square foot facility. 10TV's Kevin Landers looked into why this is being called the single biggest job creator in Ohio history.
It may come as a surprise to some that Ohio would attract a manufacturer that makes drones for the military, but state leaders say they've been trying to do this for two decades, in part because of its proximity here to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
They go by the names of Ghost X, Roadrunner, and Fury, killing machines called autonomous drones designed for the battlefield, soon to be made in Pickaway County.
We have an obligation to protect our men and women who we send as a country in harm's way. And what Anduril is doing is giving those men and women who protect us the tools that they need to defend themselves.
Over the next 10 years, Anduril promises to build a massive manufacturing site not far from one of the most preeminent military bases involved in drone warfare.
And one of the reasons that they decide to come here is because of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
5 million square feet, equivalent to 90 football fields, will be the footprint for this defense contractor. It says the electronic battlefield requires the product it makes.
The conflict in Ukraine has exposed a critical vulnerability in the United States' ability to respond to crisis.
The company warned in time of war the U.S. could find itself without enough weapons.
The United States would run out in the first few weeks of any conflict. And lead times to replenish key weapons and munitions average 2 years.
The state says landing Anduril will likely act as a magnet to other suppliers, further strengthening Ohio's role as the Silicon Heartland.
Because it sends a signal to not only other defense manufacturers, but also tech companies, that Ohio is not a flyover state.
That was Kevin Landers reporting. This 500-acre project will bring a lot of change to the area. More development, more jobs, and more people. So what does that mean for the future? Pickaway County Commissioners Jay Whipple and Gary Shearer tell 10TV this is an exciting time for the county. They say the county used to be known for manufacturing, but a lot of that industry left. Now, a new industry starting with Anduril has entered the county. The commissioners say this project will get people who grow up in Pickaway County to stay and have well-paying jobs. Local leaders are already working with high schools and career tech centers to train a workforce for Anduril.
industry that is very exciting. You read about the technology that Anduril is building now and what they will be building in the future. It's going to have an impact on the entire United States, on our defense system, and around the world.
The exciting part of what to expect is the job opportunities for their family. You know, we always like to keep our graduates here in Pickaway County.
Anduril says it plans to pay its employees $132,000 and expects to have its first drone roll off the assembly line next year. Let's bring in 10TV's Angela Ann. Angela, you've looked into this company. Mm-hmm. So who exactly are they?
Well, I think a lot of people in Central Ohio said Anduril, who? And they all went onto the website. And if you look at this video here, I mean, you can see everything from, look at this. This is a submersible, things that they build. They also build, and as we keep scrolling through the website, you'll see a lot of different videos on here. They talk about rebuilding the arsenal. So, of course, that is what's happening here now at Rickenbacker. But keep going down here. They talk about autonomy for every mission. And then they have drone protection, counter UAS. But really, the whole mission is what we're looking at, is to transform defense capabilities to use advanced technology. So as we talk about this, Anduril is really trying to merge America's defense with artificial intelligence. Take a look.
Anduril is a young company created in 2017 and based out of Southern California. But they have locations from Seattle to Massachusetts to London. The New York Times calls Anduril an AI military startup. The company founder is Palmer Luckey, the same guy who started the popular Oculus VR, a brand of virtual reality headsets. Anduril describes itself as a leader in autonomous systems and weapons manufacturing, and many of its unmanned air vehicles are built for fighting and finding threats.
So, Doug, many of those products are powered by an AI operating system. It's called Lattice, and you can see there's a tab right there on the top of their website. And it's really a system that the company hopes will really help rebrand and rebuild our national security detail.
Now, we were talking as the story was unfolding about the name of the company and trying to figure out even how it was pronounced.
Right.
But I guess fans of Lord of the Rings would already know how it was pronounced, right?
They might say, wait, I recognize that, because if you are a fan of the Lord of the Rings, then you'll know that King Aragorn, who is in the whole franchise, the name of his sword is Anduril. So whether or not that's a nod to the movie because the CEO maybe is a fan, who knows? But, I mean, he is a little eccentric. People know him for the Hawaiian shirt guy. Mm-hmm. That's what he's known for.
And the creator of the Oculus.
Yeah, creator. Yep. So, you know, there you go. But it is now a name that will become a household name here in Central Ohio.
And now we all know how to pronounce it, too.
We sure do.
Angela, thank you very much. Thanks. For that, filling us in on who this company is. And you can hear more about the historic economic development coming to Central Ohio in our new This Week in Boom Town episode with Angela. You can stream it right now on 10TV Plus. That's our free streaming app available on Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV. In other news now, as Ohio grows, so are concerns that public schools could receive less funding from the state in the future. Ohio House Speaker Matt Huffman says it's unsustainable for the state to continue funding the schools the way it's currently done. So what does this mean for your tax dollars? 10TV's Tara Jabor has our story.
Changes could be coming for Ohio public schools. The House Speaker says the money isn't going to be the same as previous years. Now, I spoke to the Ohio Federation of Teachers, who told me that they are disappointed.
House Speaker Matt Huffman says the way schools have been funded through the Fair School Funding Plan isn't really a plan.
Is there, in fact, enough money on transportation? Are we paying our teachers enough? Are we doing the things that we're supposed to, that the plan is called for? The answer is no, because that was never part of any legislation that was passed.
The House Speaker says if nothing changes, it would become unaffordable for taxpayers.
Local school districts that are severely underfunded, there are many school districts that have more money than they know what to do with.
Melissa Cropper, the president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, disagrees. The union represents over 20,000 educators and school staff across the state.
But we have to put our money where our mouth is. And we hear from the legislature all the time about how important public education is. So if public education is something that we consider very important to our children, then we need to make sure that we fund it.
Cropper says she wants the legislature to continue on the current school funding plan.
So now there's a formula that's actually based upon the components of a high quality of education instead of just putting leftover dollars into education. And so our public dollars should be going to public schools, but instead of lot of that is being diverted to private school education.
This is going to be a discussion about what do public schools and community schools and private schools and other schools need to effectively operate their schools.
And the legislature will begin discussions on the budget in the next few weeks. Reporting from the State House, Tara Jabor, 10 TV News.
Thank you, Tara. And we looked into how Columbus City schools have spent their allotment. The district's website shows as of May 31st of last year, 44% of those funds went to personnel. That covered things including summer learning programs and substitute teachers.
Before leaving office, President Joe Biden pardoned members of his family, as well as Dr. Anthony Fauci, retired General Mark Milley, and members of the House committee who investigated the January 6th Capitol attack, despite none of them being charged with a crime. Some people are curious about how broad presidential pardons can be. So, let's verify. Can a president pardon someone for a crime they haven't actually been charged with? Let's verify using these sources. The U.S. Constitution gives the president broad power to issue pardons for, quote, offenses against the United States. In the 1886 case Ex parte Garland, the court described a president's authority to pardon as, quote, unlimited, except in cases of impeachment extending to every offense known to the law and able to be exercised either before legal proceedings are taken or during their pendency or after conviction and judgment. Biden's pardons offer protection from prosecution from another presidential administration for any crimes committed during a specific time frame. Biden also pardoned his son Hunter in December to offer similar protections. The Department of Justice Office of the Pardon Attorney says pardons this broad are rare, but not unheard of. Gerald Ford issued a similar pardon to Richard Nixon following Nixon's resignation after the Watergate scandal. So we can verify, yes, presidents can pardon people for potential crimes they haven't actually been charged with. With your verify, I'm Brandon Lewis.
The Panama Canal is one of the world's most important waterways, connecting the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. Hundreds of millions of tons of cargo pass through each year. The United States uses the canal more than any other country, and President-elect Donald Trump says right now, American shippers aren't paying too much in fees.
We're being ripped off at the Panama Canal like we're being ripped off everywhere else. A secure, he just said, take it back. That's a good idea.
Trump has said if fees aren't lowered, America should regain control of the canal. That's led many to wonder, does the U.S. currently have any authority over the Panama Canal? So let's verify using these sources. At the start of the 20th century, Panama wasn't an independent country, but was instead part of Colombia. The U.S. tried to get Colombia to lease the land to build a canal, but Colombia refused. So the U.S. supported a Panamanian independence movement, which quickly succeeded. The new nation immediately agreed to let the U.S. build and run the canal, and it did for decades. Then, in 1977, the two countries agreed to run the canal together until 1999, when Panama gained full control. The terms said the U.S. can intervene only to make sure the canal stays open. For instance, if a military conflict in the region threatened to shut it down. So we can verify. No, the U.S. does not have any authority over the Panama Canal. The president of Panama has responded to Trump's comments, saying, quote, every square meter of the canal belongs to Panama and will continue to belong to it. He also said the fees are chosen by experts based on economic factors. With your verify, I'm Casey Decker.
On November 12th, President-elect Donald Trump said Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy will lead the Department of Government Efficiency once he takes office. The announcement caused some people to wonder if Trump is creating a new government agency. So, let's verify. Our sources are a statement by Trump, the Constitution, and the Congressional Research Service. Trump says Musk and Ramaswamy will provide advice and guidance from outside of government for around 18 months on how to make the government smaller and less bureaucratic. This isn't the same thing as creating a new government agency, which, under the Constitution, can only be done by Congress. So, no, Trump is not creating a new government agency called the Department of Government Efficiency. The most recently created federal agency was the Department of Homeland Security, which was formed in 2002. With you or verify, I'm Brandon Lewis.
Inauguration Day is tomorrow. It's also Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which is held on the third Monday of January. The last time the inauguration fell on the same day as Martin Luther King Day was President Barack Obama's second inauguration in 2013. According to the National Constitution Center, Martin Luther King Day was finally approved as a national holiday in 1983. All 50 states made it a state government holiday by 2000. This year, the King Center's theme is Mission Possible, Protecting Freedom, Justice, and Democracy in the Spirit of Nonviolence 365. Dr. King pushed for the end of racial segregation through nonviolent means. The civil rights leader also famously led the March on Washington in 1963 and was instrumental in getting the Civil Rights Act passed. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964 and was assassinated in 1968. Some events are taking place in our area to honor King. The fifth annual MLK March in Linden is set for Monday at noon. Organizers say to meet at the Good Shepherd Baptist Church at 11. The march ends on the corner of Cleveland and 11th Avenue. Then the City of Columbus's annual Martin Luther King Jr. March steps off at 3:30 at the historical Lincoln Theater. Then the program starts at 5 o'clock. We've made it easy to find a list of MLK Jr. Day events happening around Central Ohio. Just text the keyword MLK to the number on your screen, 614-460-3345, and we will send you a list right to your phone.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV, from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan, heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM ESPN Columbus.